Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on The Grave Talks, part two of Inside the Haunted Nighthouse. A conversation with owner Eric Freeman Sims. So when you talk about the intelligent spirits and you think there are three there, how did you come to that conclusion?
I'm just getting different EVPs and things and asking questions and getting answers. You know, starting off with the simple question, are you male or female? You know, did you live here in the 1940s? Did you live here in the 1950s, 1960s? You know, that type of stuff. And then the more I've learned the history of the house as well, I kind of zeroed in on the three that I believe are there. I'm not a big medium person because I tend to be rather skeptical because I'll be the first person to throw out some paranormal evidence if I can explain it anyway. But I've talked to two separate mediums that I know and that I pretty well trust, and they've never been to the house. One lives in Florida, one lives in New Jersey. They've never been to the house. The only thing they've seen is the stuff that I posted online that's available for everybody else. And they have told me things that they shouldn't know about the people and about the house itself. And so that have kind of also solidified who I already thought was there. And they just kind of solidified that for me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And they've never even been there.
No. And all they did was prove to me that their gift is the real deal.
I do find that fascinating. People who are like that. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah. And I'll give you one example. So I was told by somebody who had been around the house when they were growing up back in the 90s. And he said that there was a man, and they believe it's one of the knights. Don't know which knight it is, but there's a man on the ground floor that hangs out in the master bedroom. Well, we get lots of noises in the master bedroom, like furniture moving, things like that. But I've never seen the man. He's not one of the two apparitions I've seen. But this guy said as a teenager, he'd seen him several times. And he said every time that he had seen him in the house, he had looked at him like he was the intruder. Like the young boy was the intruder, like, what are you doing in my house type of deal? That's kind of the vibe I got from him. So then I had changed the shower curtain. There's a bathroom right there by that bedroom. And I changed the shower curtain and the rugs to a teal color because the bathroom's gray. Well, the foyer right outside the bathroom is kind of a teal color, but these are two different teals, two different shades. Anyway, I was talking to my medium friend in New Jersey, and she said, in the middle of our conversation, she said, I just got to tell you this because this guy won't leave me alone. But there's a man who hangs out in the master bedroom at the night house. And he said, what the F is up with all the teal? And she had no idea that I changed the shower curtain.
That's incredible.
I didn't put any pictures of the bathroom up, you know. But he was tired of all the teal, apparently.
So is it still teal?
No, I changed it out to dark blue.
I would imagine he likes dark blue much better than teal.
But yeah, that because there I haven't posted any pictures of the bathroom on there, and I surely didn't tell her that I changed out the shower curtain and the rugs. I mean, you know, it's just not something we had a conversation about, you know. So I found that pretty telling, pretty interesting.
Did you get quite a few people from around town after you guys bought it? Because you had mentioned that some people had shared some stories with you of experiences they had had with the house. Did you find any that were quite compelling and interesting?
So there are two that really, really got me. One of them was I got a message on Facebook, and we kind of messaged back and forth. She had been her mom had been a friend of the Rogers family back in the 70s and 80s. And so she had gone to Christmas parties at the Rogers house and kind of knew them really well. And she asked me she beat around the bush for a little while before she got to the paranormal stuff. And like a lot of people typically do. And because she didn't want me to think she was crazy, I guess. Mm-hmm. She said, have you ever heard the ghost parrot? And I said, what are you talking about, ghost parrot? I didn't know anybody. Nobody told me that anybody in the house had ever owned a parrot. And she told me that the Rogers family, who lived there for 65 years, hadn't owned a macaw parrot. And macaw parrots live 50, 60, 80 years. The parrot had like died in the 90s or something in the house. And I said, no, I haven't heard the ghost parrot. Well, since then, we've gotten two recordings of what sounded like a parrot squawking and whistling. And this is not a bird that we have around here. Birds around here don't make those noises. And I grew up with parrots and birds. And this is unmistakably a parrot squawking and whistling. And then the other thing is I had a different person who is familiar with the house as well message me out of the blue and say, have you heard the piano play by itself yet? So up in the parlor, we have the Rogers piano. It's from the Rogers family. It's a 1939 Baldwin Akersonic piano. Really, it only needs tuned is the only thing that's wrong with it. The piano, it actually doesn't sound too bad and to be as old as it is. And I said, no, I haven't heard the piano play itself. And then I had somebody else ask me about the piano playing by itself. Well, then a month later, I have I have eight cameras around the house that get set off by motion or sound. Well, I had put the camera on top of the piano because it gets the entire parlor that way. And one night the camera went off and it was the piano, one piano key, but it wasn't just a quick note. It sounded like they held it down because it sustained and reverbed until the key till the string got done vibrating, I guess.
Wow.
And so it was really loud on the camera. But the fact that those two people asked me specifically if I'd heard those things and then, you know, weeks or a month later, they happen is, I think, is pretty incredible correlation and evidence.
There is a video on your website that I saw, and it was this mist that's just kind of moving across in front of the camera. I've never seen anything quite like that.
Yeah, that was the very first thing that we caught on video. Other than, I think, a few noises. That was in, I believe, July of last year. It has the timestamp and the date on it. And it was like 5:30 in the evening. And so it's in the middle of the summer. So, you know, it's definitely not dark yet until like 9 o'clock. And the camera, about 30 seconds before that mist comes through, the camera switches to night vision because they automatically switch when it gets dark to night vision and the infrared. So they switch to black and white. But it had no reason to because the sun's shining through the window. But 30 seconds before it switches to night vision, the mist comes across and it looks white in the night vision and it comes across the camera and it's rather large. I mean, almost like a human size.
Yeah.
It doesn't disappear in front of the camera. It floats by the camera and just floats off frame. And then about a minute later, the camera turned back to day color vision. I found that odd that why would the camera just in the middle of the day? They don't do that. I've never had another one do that, to switch to night vision in the middle of the day. And so it was very interesting that happened at the same time that mist went by.
Have you captured anything like that since? Because that was crazy.
A lady not too long ago on a paranormal investigation, I had told them about the shadow that I see. It's not a shadow figure. I don't want to use that terminology because then people think of Hat Man and things like that. It's just that you just see a shadow go across the window and the wall up in the attic on one wall, one area. And I had told her about it. And so when they were investigating, she took a laser grid up there with all the little green dots, you know, on the wall. She snapped a picture with her cell phone. She snapped three pictures in a row, like we typically do, because one of them, you'll a lot of times catch something, you'll catch another two. And in one of those, it looked like a mist trying to form and it was blocking out some of the laser points on the wall.
Interesting.
And that's the only other thing that I've seen that is similar, but I haven't caught any other mist or anything on camera.
And you know, it seems to me, since they came to you in a dream, that they wanted somebody to go into this house and to help restore it. Because if you guys hadn't stepped up, who knows? It could have been just torn down, like built into apartments, right, like you said. So
yeah, because it's on 3 acres and it's in the middle of town. And so it'd be prime real estate to build some duplexes or apartment buildings or townhouses, you know, something like that, because it's a pretty good sized property.
They'd have to be, I would think. That's why you get that good energy from them, because they are happy.
Yeah. And a lot of people have asked us if the renovations have caused even more activity. And my answer is, I don't know, because things happen all day, every day, whether we're remodeling anything or not. I do ask them all. I talk to them like they're living. I tell them good morning when we come in. I tell them what's going on. You know, tonight we got a team coming in that's going to talk to you. Please talk to them, you know, communicate with them. I tell them good night at night when we're leaving. I tell them bye, we'll be back in a couple of days, or when we're coming back. And then also I will ask them, you know, make some noise on the camera tonight or give me a knock or something if you're happy with what we're doing with the house, with whatever project we have going on. And I've had pretty good luck with that. I was in the kitchen by myself a couple of weeks ago, and we had just did a wallpaper mural in the dining room. Really love it. It looks great. And it's kind of, it fits the time period of like the 1860s, 1870s. They would have had big wallpaper murals of like landscape scenes and things. And that's what we put up on a whole wall in the dining room. And so I was standing at the sink in the kitchen, and I said, will you knock or tap on something if you like the mural that we put up? And I heard a tap on the dining room table behind me. Hmm. And I said, just to make sure that was you, not just something random, if that was you and you like what we did with the mural, please do it again. And I heard another tap on command. And that's the second time that I've kind of had that during the day with them. One day we had done the kitchen ceiling tongue and groove board because we went in the kitchen to kind of have an old country feel. And I was walking out, and I walked through the dining room and fixed to go out the side doors where the big columns are, and I'm locking up and turning the lights off and things like that. And I said, tonight on the cameras, you know, make some noise for me if you like the kitchen, what we're doing with the kitchen. And I didn't even have to wait. I heard a big loud bang behind me in the dining room. And I said, okay. And it's all caught on camera because there's a camera right there in the foyer. And you see me stop, and so I'm coming around the corner. You hear me say, okay, I got my answer. Thank you. And then I left, you know.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Have you heard much from the people in town going, oh, the guys with the haunted house? You know, did you get any feedback like that? Because sometimes people do, you know, because people in the town don't really agree with what they're doing. Yeah. But I think people in Hopkinsville probably are like, it's the town's haunted house. We've all known it for years.
Well, there's a couple other houses around town that are known to be haunted. But I think probably our direct neighbors that we almost share a driveway with, they're kind of the ones that were like weirded out at first. Like, you're doing what in the house? Because they've lived there for 30 years. They're an older couple. And now they've kind of gotten used to us, and they're always asking us. They'll see us out the next morning after we've had team in. How'd it go last night? They have a good time, you know? And they're excited to hear the stories and stuff now. And they're not so... They had seen some things, I think, in the windows and things over the years and some things on the property. And so they were kind of leery and scared of it. And I think now we've taken that out of it for them, you know, by telling them some of the funny stories and some interesting stuff that's happened to us. And also, when we first moved in, Mr. Harold, our neighbor, he said, I won't go in your house at all, so don't ever ask me to. So since then, he has come into the house and looked around. So,
did he say that because he just was uncomfortable with the house, or did he pick up on something?
I think he, because he, the previous owners, when they moved to California, he used to mow the yard for them. And I think he had seen some things, like maybe in the basement windows or in the windows of the house, you know, when it was empty. And I think he had seen or heard some things, and it kind of creeped him out. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going in there. And then we've invited him over one day because he was curious what we were doing. And yeah, we shut him off through the house. He was fine. He was comfortable with it, you know. So I think we kind of changed his mind a little bit about the paranormal. That's nothing to hurt you. And, you know,
right.
That we kind of embrace it. But he was also used to the neighbor, the previous neighbors, the wife worked from home. So she was home all the time by herself. And so she, like, we have stuff happen all every day, you know, during the day, we hear voices and footsteps and all kinds of stuff. So she was going over telling the neighbors all the stuff that, you know, would happen because it would freak her out. And so she'd leave the house and walk over to the neighbors. Until she kind of calmed down and felt comfortable going back in from what they said. So I think they got kind of freaked out because she was over it, you know, and now we've made it a little more normal. But no, they kind of like the excitement, I think, too, of us bringing like a tour bus of people in the house.
Yeah.
You know, and they also are really enjoying all that we're doing to the property and the house to clean it up and make it look nice. They're really enjoying that. So,
well, because I was going to ask you about you talked to the previous owners, and had they had experiences there? It sounds like they did.
So the only time that we got to talk to the owner, the husband flew back from California, but the wife didn't for the closing. We never met her.
She never wanted to come back.
But she had to work or something was their excuse. But we asked him at the closing about the paranormal, and he adamantly denied himself ever having any experiences, which I find very hard to believe. But he said, yeah, my wife had them all the time. That was the end of the conversation. we stood for 5 minutes talking to him. Once we signed the paperwork, he gave us the keys and a little bit rundown on the house. And then that was it. And now he won't, I've messaged him on Facebook to ask him questions, things, and he won't answer back.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Why it was kind of a bitter, answer? It was a bittersweet thing for him to get rid of the house, I guess. And so we're the bad guys in that situation, you know? So,
but not because it was for sale. And you bought it.
Yeah.
So you're kind of the good guys for saving the house.
But he's got some sort of sore spot there. So yeah, I messaged him on Facebook. He knows who I am. He just don't want anything to do with it, I guess.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I don't even want to ask him about the paranormal. I want to ask him about practical things about the house.
Right, and some things that have been done, or maybe you have a question about something.
Well, our biggest question I want to ask him is, because he's bricko blocked to shore up the foundation in the cellar. So the cellar walls were originally dirt, hand-carved dirt. And there's a couple of places where we can still see that dirt, and you can still see the original pickaxe marks. And when it was originally dug out by hand in 1815, well, he put bricko block walls up and, you know, did all the waterproofing and stuff, which I'm glad he did because he stopped the house from falling in. But he covered up any evidence of tunnels. And we've been told by so many people that there's tunnels going from the cellar to across the road in the woods because the house is part of the Underground Railroad. So,
oh, now that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation.
Right.
Yeah. So I've actually got somebody coming out later on the summer, and we're going to film it, but he's going to use ground penetrating radar to see if we can find these tunnels.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And I was also reading about Civil War history that there had been a plague.
Yeah.
And it said that the soldiers, they used the basement for a hospital.
Yeah, the Knight House basement was one of the houses they used in town because it was such a big house and there was just a lot of room in the basement. They used several houses. So with that, the Union occupied Hopkinsville three times and the Confederacy occupied Hopkinsville three times because the railroad is a major railroad that runs through there. One of the occupations of the Confederacy, they had this thing called black pox pneumonia that went through their ranks. And it wasn't just in Hopkinsville. It was in a huge chunk of the Confederate Army in general. And I don't know how many died total, but in Hopkinsville, about 300. It killed about 300 soldiers out of 3,000 that were stationed there. And they called it black pox pneumonia because these black blood blisters came upon the skin, but pneumonia is ultimately what killed them. From what I understand, when I've looked it up, doctors today still don't know what it was, what virus or what bacteria caused it. And as far as we know, we ain't seen it since. But they could identify about 200 of them because back then they didn't wear dog tags or any identification.
Right.
They had to rely on you having a journal or a letter or, you know, some soldiers even sewn their name in their clothes. The Confederacy did not have money to send the dead back home like the Union did. So the Union would package up their soldiers in pine boxes and send them back to where they came from, where, you know, Virginia or Kentucky or Tennessee or wherever. And they would get buried in their family cemetery. The Confederacy, there's about 200 of them that they identified. The other 100, they didn't. So at Riverside Cemetery in Hopkinsville, you have the 200 marked graves, and then there's one mass grave with the other 100 in it.
Oh.
Yeah. And so there's no telling how many of them died in the Knight House basement. Like I said, it wasn't the only house that was used. The closest proper hospitals were Louisville and Nashville, and both of those cities were highly contested during the Civil War. So it had been very dangerous to take sick men and travel that far, you know, with a carriage, you know, horse and buggy. And they were dying anyway, and there wasn't much they could do for them. But, I mean, they basically just brought them into the basement to die and kind of quarantined them, I guess.
And with that history happening in that house, do you feel primarily like the spirits who are there are Knight family? Or do you feel there's some unknown presence as well?
There are a couple of unknowns outside on the property. There's one who's been making himself a little more well-known, who I believe is an intelligent spirit. We've picked up on some enslaved people as well through EVPs and things that have answered questions to the point that we've asked them, were you a slave? And they answered yes, you know, and things like that. But yeah, the two of them are more modern history from what I believe. And one of them is one of the knights. I just don't know which one of the male knights it is. And I think one of the guy outside the house on the grounds. I think he was a farmhand or something to that extent. He's a white guy. And I've seen him once. In the middle of the day, I saw him in a white, like, linen shirt. And my mother-in-law saw him separately, and I hadn't told her what I'd seen, and she described him the same way I saw him. So that's kind of a correlation there and kind of validated what I saw.
Right. Was it one of those that when you looked, you thought, who's that guy? And then...
Yeah.
Wow.
So the front porch, you can actually walk under the porch because it's up on these brick pillars, and there's actually a basement window under the front porch. So it's tall enough you can walk under. I'm 6 foot tall, and I can walk under there without ducking. And so you can see out the other side. Well, we've had some issues with that neighbor on that side, and he's not allowed on our property. And so the first time I saw this guy, I saw him walking on the other side of the porch. I walked around there to see if it was our neighbor, and there was nobody there. And the neighbor wasn't outside or anything. And then when my mother-in-law saw him, me and her were standing on the same side of the porch I was when I first saw him. And we were talking about decorating for Christmas in last November. And very rudely, in the middle of talking, she just stops and walks around the porch. And I was like, what are you doing? And because she's not rude like that normally, you know. And she comes back around. She's like, I just saw a guy in a white shirt walk on the other side of the porch. And she said, I thought it was your neighbor. And she said, there's nobody there. It's the same exact thing that I saw. So,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think it's so with some of the teams that have come in, I think a few of the other knights maybe pop in and visit. A few other of the Knight family pop in and visit, but they're not around all the time. There was one team that came in. There was a team that was scouting for a TV show that came in, three of them. And they did kind of a mini investigation from like 7 to 11. I just gave them a brief history. I did not give them a rundown of like the Knight kids or anything. They just wanted a brief history because they were just doing basically visuals for the TV show to see visually how it looked. Also to see if it was active enough to do a TV show, right? At the end of the night, they came back and said, does the name John or Ida mean anything? And I said, well, JB Knight's name was John B. Knight. And I said, he had a son, John Jr. And I said, he had a daughter named Ida. And they're like, really? And I said, yeah. And they said, they got both those names on EVP. They had a man say John's name and had a woman say Ida. And Ida is the daughter that lived there her whole life and never had kids, never got married. And she lived there. She was, I think, 2 or 3 years old when they moved in the 1860s. And she lived until 1938.
So the only house she ever knew.
Yeah, yeah. In every census, she was always a homemaker. You know, women back then, they didn't work and really didn't hold down jobs. There's a lot of, in the 1880s, 1890s, early 1900s, there are a lot of ads in the newspaper, local newspaper, because she sold these fancy golden turkeys. And you could buy a turkey that she raised for $5, or you could buy an unhatched egg for $3. And that was kind of her hustle.
Now, you can take a history tour of the house, which I think would be fascinating. And when you do that, do you go on all 6 levels and kind of all around the house?
Yeah, we start outside and I go around talking about the architecture of the house and how it was changed and those type of things. And then some of the interesting structures in the house, which we have a death door, which is not very common.
On the video. How did you figure out that was a death door?
So that's one of the first questions I had. So the county historian, I invited him out shortly after we bought the house. And he's been the county historian. He's paid. He has a salary. That's what he does for a living. He's the county historian, and he's been doing it for 50 years. He knows everything about every house in that town except for the Knight house. That's always kind of been his white whale, his enigma, that he couldn't ever – it's hard to find history on it. So, but I invited him out to learn about the house myself. The first question I asked him, when we walked up on the side porch with the big columns, I said, we have this big double doorway, fancy doorway here that has a double set of doors. And then there's this little single white nondescript door to your right that goes in from the outside into the dining room. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you need a door directly into the dining room? Especially on this side, because it wouldn't have been a slave entrance, not where you could see them from the side porch. The side porch is the main entrance. And he said, well, that's a death door. And so the death door dates back to the spiritualist movement between the 1860s and 1890s. The death door, there's two different beliefs with the death door. The one thing they have in common is that the door stays open the entire time they're having a wake in the house. And so the case of the Knight house, they would have the wakes in the dining room because it's on the ground floor. They would other houses would have had them in the parlor, but because of the fancy parlor, they show off their wealth, right? You know, people come by for the wake. But the parlor's upstairs, so nobody wants to carry a heavy casket up and downstairs. So they basically would have put the coffin on the dining room table for the wake. And the door would stay open no matter what time of year it was, what temperature was, day and night, stay open 24/7 while they're having the wake. So the first belief was that the living were not allowed to enter nor exit the death door. It was for the dead to leave the house. And the only time the living went through is when they carried the coffin out to make sure the spirit followed the body out the death door. Then the door was closed and locked and not open again until they had another wake. The other belief was that no living person could enter through that door, but all living people had to exit through that door when they came to the wake so that the dead person could not follow them. But then they would carry the body out so that the spirit would follow the body.
Interesting. I had never heard of that.
Yeah, me either. Me either. Apparently, if you go further south to like New Orleans, Savannah, Charleston, you'll find houses with a death door. And then I think it's more of a New England thing. In some of those older houses, you have death doors, but it's not a common thing. Definitely not around here. And being an investigator, I've been to so many historical locations, you know, in Middle Tennessee and Kentucky, and I've never seen one.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. I'd never heard of that. Now, for paranormal investigations, can people rent it out for the night, or how do you do that?
Yeah, so we have a few different price points. The first one is 7 to midnight, and it is $150 for up to 8 people. That includes up to 8 people. And then we have the 7 p.m. to 3 a.m., the half night, 8-hour investigation. That is $250, and that includes up to 8 people is included in that price. And then we have a full overnight that is from 7 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning. And the full overnight, they get to sleep in the beds in the house and spend the full night so they can investigate until they want to go to bed. And that includes up to 10 people. And yeah, we provide snacks and things for everybody and drinks. So we have a fridge full of drinks and coffee maker and all this. Try to pull out all the stops. I try to think of all the places I'd been to that didn't offer any amenities.
I was going to ask you that. $1,700,
you know?
Like, as a paranormal investigator, when you set up your own place, did you put some things in there knowing people would like to have access to this? Like the snacks would be nice.
Yeah, and we have a microwave, and we have microwave popcorn, and like I said, coffee, tea, you know, all those different kinds of things. And we have they can use the refrigerator too, because a lot of teams are bringing their own food and snacks. And then we also have the new kitchen. We have a dining room table in there, and that's kind of their base station. I have a charging station for them to charge equipment, because that part of the house is new. There's nothing paranormal goes on in there. Really, you know what I'm saying? Nobody's hanging out there investigating. And so that's kind of their base station. That's where they come and take a break and get something to drink, something to eat. It also encourages them to keep the kind of food and drinks in the kitchen, you know, where it's easier to clean up. But also we have two fully functional bathrooms that they can use. If you stay overnight, you can take a shower if you want. We have fresh towels and linens, and the beds are always freshly made. You know, so we offer all of that. We have high-speed internet, you know, because a lot of teams like to go live and things like that. So yeah, we just try to pull out all the stops. And also the price point, I wanted the price to be cheap enough that no matter how big or small the team is, that they could afford to come to the house in one capacity or another. And also on our history tours, it's $10 a person. Seniors are free and 12 and under is free. And so, every dime goes right back into the house. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. We're not making any money. And that's the point, is to go back into the house and help us renovate what we need to and keep it up and pay the bills.
Now, the website is thenighthousek.com.
Yeah.
And I'll put link.
Night is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So I'll put a link on the show notes as well, so you can just click on that for more information. What a great conversation, Eric. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this house, because I'm so glad the two of you bought it and you saved this house.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always fun to talk about the house. And like I told you before we started recording, I could sit here and talk for 4 hours about the history. There's so much interesting history and interesting people involved with the house. So I do a 90-minute tour for history tour, and it's I try to cram as much as I can into it without leaving any interesting stuff out. So it's hard to do sometimes, though, because it is such an interesting house with such a long history.
Oh, I bet. But it's just fascinating. But I'm glad that this house is going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, hope so. Hopefully, when we're dead and gone, the next people will take care of it too.
And that wraps up our conversation with Eric Freeman Sims about the Knight House. For more information, follow them on Facebook or visit their website, thenighthouseky.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun, anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free?
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.